So this is our last day of silence, perhaps at Mount Marisa, perhaps not. Perhaps there'll be others in the future. Janet had an idea of writing a history of our time here. Then I think decided it would be easier if I just talked. And then we could put that up on the website and she wouldn't have to do it, try to write it. Is that fair?
Yeah.
So I'm going to tell some of the stories that everybody's probably heard, but will be part of creating this history. And I'm telling this, of course, you know, as I experience it. I think it's ultimately a story about attachment and sorrow and suffering. Attachment and sadness and suffering. This is, it could be entitled Attachment, Sadness, and Suffering, colon, My Years at Mount Marisa. My first experience here, I think I'd been retired for about a year and a half. When the attack on the World Trade Center happened, and the fire department was scrambling to set up a counseling center here for families, the firefighters and their families. And Diane got a call from somebody in the fire department or something, because she was the chief of the Children and Youth Service at South Beach at the time, asking if she could come and help out here, because they were expecting a lot of children of firefighters who had lost their parents, or parents basically lost their parents. She said that she didn't have the time to do that, but her husband was retired and he had more time. They called me and I said, yeah, I was doing some consulting, but I did have time. So I came here. Actually, I never saw any children. Only once. By and large, it wasn't the kids who were coming. In the first few months, there were a few families. Some of it was pretty moving stuff. But as time went by, it was mostly firefighters who had survived, who were coming here. But it was really kind of the atmosphere here at Mount Marisa was really wonderful. That the retreat center just opened itself in response to this crisis. That, as far as I know, nobody ever asked for any money. There was a need, and the center responded. I think they were providing food. You came here to help, or you came here to be helped. You could eat, there were many funerals going on. So there would be days in the city when there were numerous funerals for firefighters, and it unprecedented the way in which the firefighters usually it always responded is that pretty much all the off-duty firefighters in the city would go to a funeral, so that for the family it was this very wonderful, kind of show of support and gratitude and all that kind of stuff, that there would be just this, these long lines of people in uniform. They couldn't do it for everybody. So one of the things that was happening was that because of the whole nature of this, of the 9/11 phenomenon, is that firefighters in much higher than usual numbers were coming from all over the country, all over the world, to be present at funerals. Many of them were staying here. You know, they opened. People were staying in the dorms at Mount Menmies. They come in. You know, it was a wonderful thing for the firefighters who survived and for their families, because they couldn't create out of their own numbers the presence that they wanted to create at all the funerals. There were so many funerals, but the welcoming here helped, you know, that kind of the broader community of firefighters to respond. And then to be able to be here, you know, to listen to people tell their stories, you know, whether they were people who were at Ground Zero and survived, or people who had, you know, weird stories about why they weren't at Ground Zero and therefore survived. You know, it was just to get to hear all these stories was an incredibly moving experience. But that was my introduction to Mount Manresa. About 6 months later, Memorial Day weekend, there's a retreat that Roshi Kennedy is leading at Snowmass, the Trappist Retreat Center near Aspen, Colorado. And he invited some people, including me, to go, which was like a big deal in my life. I had read, you know, sort of all, read every word of Merton's journals, and I waited for them to come, you know, they were publishing all of them around that time. And I would wait for the next volume to come out, the way Jamie waited for the next Harry Potter book to come out. You know, except that Barnes & Noble didn't open at midnight. You know, and I always wondered, as I was reading these, you know, would the opportunity ever come up in my life to, you know, participate in a retreat at a Trappist monastery? Kennedy invited me to go with him on this, I was like thrilled. I mean, I knew he was inviting other people too, but it was like, I was really personal for me that I was being invited. I was thrilled to go. And, you know, had a wonderful experience there. It was a wonderful, wonderful retreat site. You know, it's both a retreat, you know, it's kind of both a retreat center and a functioning monastery. You know, so to be there for whatever it was, 3 or 4 days, was a terrific, terrific experience. And there's a short leg on the flight back, I guess, from Aspen to Denver. And then you get on the plane back to Newark, and sitting with Russ Ball on the flight back, the leg from Aspen to Denver. And Russ is a lay person, you know, a Zen practitioner and I think devout, dedicated Catholic, and very very committed to supporting, I think, the Jesuits. He and his family have given tremendous support to St. Ignatius. He says, as we're riding back on the plane, he's telling me, you know, he's had this discussion with the Jesuit provincial who wants to see Zen groups like Roshi Kennedy with Russ's support had started at St. Ignatius. He wants to see these in all the retreat houses in the province. So this is like a weird coincidence to me. I say, it's like a throwaway line. Well, if you ever decide to do something on Mount Manresa on Staten Island, I would love to help. So a couple of months later, I get a call to come to this meeting with Russ and Roshi Kennedy and the new Father Quinnen, who's the new director of the retreat house here, and to have this discussion about having a Zen group here. And I'm happy to be part of this. I mean, it's I just felt, in part so grateful, just as a person, for the way in which Mount Manresa had opened itself in the aftermath of 9/11, that the opportunity to give something back was wonderful. And I thought my role would be, I could ring the bells if Roshi wanted me to. I figured he'd come probably every other week. That was kind of his routine with St. Ignatius. And I'd hold the fort when he wasn't here. I wouldn't do anything. I just, if anybody needed beginner's instruction, I would do the beginner's instruction. I'd ring the bells. And, don't worry, Roshi will be here next week. Roshi did this wonderful first introduction to Zen practice. He handled some, challenging, provocative questions from the audience, as the sort of questions I think only Staten Islanders can ask. Somebody raises their hand. They says, are you aware that what you're saying is heresy? He has handled all of this. It was just like, he didn't get antagonized or provoked or anything. And people started out sitting on couches in the lounge in the other building, and by the end of the evening, he had them all on cushions on the floor, and he introduced me, and great. The next week, he wasn't there, and I was there. There weren't as many people as there was when Roshi was there, and then Roshi didn't come again for a long time, and the number of people kept getting less and less. But here we were. It was, for me, it was a very moving experience in a lot of ways. It was the connection to Mount Manresa. It was also, my teachers, my Bernie, Roshi Bernie and Roshi Kennedy, both have this really strong commitment to creating an interfaith, multi-faith kind of container for Zen practice, and to be invited, Roshi is Kennedy loves to, they have to talk about it. They all love this. Here's this Zen group at Mount Manresa, there, where the person who's leading the group is a Jewish Buddhist. they get a kick out of it. I get a kick out of it. I like that. There's a little attachments there, I like that, it was very nice. It's always been very nice. We always felt that we were making a contribution. That what we were doing was enriching the offerings that the retreat center was able to provide. And that while we've always been a pretty small group, I think it was an offering that has meant things, something really positive in the community, and that many people have come back after not having sat with us for years. Mm-hmm. They come in and say, it was a comfort to me to know that you were always there. I like that too. I was attached to that. There's kind of a pride in the stability that when we were first talking with Bernie. Bernie had a kind of study group where we were creating the Zen Peacemaker Order and talking about what the rules should be of the order. And I remember he brought up this idea of stability. I was younger then, which I thought was a horrifying idea. I thought instability was a great virtue. But I, you know, the stability meant you like you were committing yourself to be in the same place, at, you know, every night, you know, every week, the same time, every week, week after week. I was always interested in change. What new? What's new? But I over the 9 years that we've been sitting here, I've come to appreciate this, you know, the stability of what it meant. You know, the fact that, with the exception of a couple of Christmas weeks over the 9 years, the last couple of years that Mount Renrisa has closed for the holidays, and I think 2 snow days, that we've basically sat every Tuesday mm-hmm. for 9 years. Sometimes without me, many times without me. Other people kept, you know, held the group, so that the offering was always there, and that if you needed someplace to go and sit, it was a place. And we sat with, you know, we had a vision starting out, that this was the beginning. Another dream that I had was that somebody from a synagogue or a mosque or a Protestant church was going to, you know, come up to me kind of aggressively and say, "How come you're doing this at a Catholic retreat house?" And I could say, "Well, you haven't invited us to do it at your place yet." You know, and they would, and, you know, we would then be sitting, say, 4 nights a week instead of 1 night a week, and 1 night would be at a Protestant church, and 1 night would be here, and another night would be at a synagogue, and the 4th night would be at a mosque. And that maybe that was an easier entry, you know, each place would be an easier entry point. And, you know, this place may be more accessible for Catholics, maybe easier for Catholics to try Zen if it's at Mount Manresa than if it was at a public space. But it might be harder for some Jews to come here, and maybe it would be easier for them to enter this gate if we were sitting in a synagogue. And that's kind of, but I thought over time this would change, you know, and that you would come here because it was easier for you to enter Mount Manresa, but then you'd have a course you have to take on Tuesday night, and you wouldn't want to miss sitting, so you'd go sit at the synagogue. And that would begin to happen. Didn't quite turn out so much that way. But I was very attached to this. And, you know, to the reality of it and to all the fantasies that I wove around it. So one of my fantasies was, this is silly sounding probably, you know, but there would be some sort of papal recognition for what we were doing. you know, so I could be the first Jewish Buddhist teacher invited to come to the Vatican for some event or something like that. It's going to be really cool. That's all my ego, right? You know, so when, you know, when we found out in the last couple of months that we were no longer so much an offering of the retreat house, that we were offering collaboratively, because it was something, first of all, that the Jesuits wanted to offer, and it was more like we were a tenant and we weren't paying enough rent. That was like a shock. I was hurt. I felt sad. That's the sad part. Attachment, sadness. I have this favorite poetry line, probably, that you've all heard, which I used to think was a line from Keats. It is better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. Chris, a couple of years ago, informed me that it was actually Tennyson, which was a real disappointment to me, because Keats is a really great poet and Tennyson's a bit of a mediocrity. but that's, and,
But I like that line, and I do, I recognize that this romanticism of Keats and or Tennyson pretty much a Western phenomenon. Maybe not so much in the Chinese-Japanese tradition. So my understanding of how we work with attachment is not so much to avoid attachment, but to maintain the awareness of the attachment. So the awareness of the attachment, when Mountain Man Riso pulls the rug out from under my fantasies of papal recognition and stability and stuff, I can just feel sad. That was a fun dream, and I enjoyed that dream, and I'm glad I had that dream, and it's okay to feel sad about it. But there's no suffering involved. Because it was just a fantasy. It was just an illusion. It was all empty. It was paper. It wasn't like this thing was on its way from the Vatican and they just stopped it. Nothing happened in the Vatican about me. No one in the Vatican has heard of me yet. So here it is. It's sad. It's sad to have this come to an end. And even though we're going to move a couple of miles and we're going to continue on Tuesday nights, it's kind of an end. It's a sadness for me. Because our doing this, and offering this group all these years at a Jesuit retreat house meant a lot to Bernie, meant a lot to Roshi Kennedy. Those are my teachers, and I was proud that this was something that they felt good about. It's a manifestation of their teaching that they felt good about. I felt good about that. And it's sad. Susan articulated the word, what's going to happen? One of these people who's been counting on us being here, thinking we've been here every week, is going to show up, in 6 months, and the doors are going to be locked, and will they be able to find us? Now they probably will, it's another illusion, that now they won't be able to find us, because they're going to Google us, and they'll find us, because nothing is so hard to find anymore. The fact, the awareness that nothing is permanent, even while enjoying the illusion of semi-permanence called stability, and that it could all come to an end at any minute, like our lives, I think the benefit of that is that we don't need to suffer with it. I think the Western romantic Tennysonian version of Zen is that attachment's okay. It's better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. There's philosophical ways of saying that, probably Zen ways of saying that, you don't have to be attached to someone in order to love them. Therefore, I don't know what. You don't have to feel sadness. You don't have to suffer. Well, you don't have to suffer. Maybe attachment is allowing yourself to be dependent. Trust. Very romantic, I guess. I don't know. I don't know if it stands up to philosophical scrutiny. I think the romantic Zen is that you cultivate attachments and you cultivate the awareness of attachments, and you appreciate the sadness without suffering. So in a few weeks we'll start sitting at Wagner, and I'll do a new beginning talk, maybe, but this is the farewell to Mount Manresa talk.